The significance of ragtime music is often lost to its later cousin jazz. But it's important to know that ragtime was the first instance when African Americans influenced American popular music. The taste for ragtime caught on like wildfire across the country at the turn of the century. Listen to this podcast and learn more about ragtime. Hi, this is Jenny Ang from Ford's Theater. I'm here with Rob Bamberger, host of Hot Jazz on WAMU. We're here to talk about the history and legacy of ragtime. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Nice of you to invite me to do this.
We're thrilled to have you. So to get started, what are the origins of ragtime music?
Historians have suggested that the foundation for ragtime was in something called the ring shout.
A ring shout is a traditionally religious African-American dance in which participants move in a shuffling manner, single file, counterclockwise. Worshippers would move in a circle to a beat they created by clapping and by banging a stick on a wooden surface. Because drumming was forbidden by slave masters, enslaved blacks on plantations would use the stick, their clapping and foot stomping, to create the polyrhythm of African drumming.
And then comes the cakewalk, which was really sort of an exaggeration of the ring shout. Cakewalk featured a lot of exaggerated high stepping.
The cakewalk was a dance that mimicked Southern gentlemen. It was performed by black slaves, often for their own slave masters, who had no idea they were being made fun of. The dance was a competition, and the slave masters were the judges. The prize? A cake. This is where we get the expression, it takes the cake. Or, if something is easy, often you'll hear, it's a cakewalk. Eventually, these dances were duplicated by whites themselves.
And all of this, the ring shout, the cakewalk, is marking blacks recapturing the cultural identity that they had largely suppressed during the long years of slavery. Well, ragtime begins with pianists, believed mainly to have come out of the Midwestern United States and doing what's been described as taking a melody and ragging it. And that can kind of have two expressions. One is to take some license with the melody itself, let it take on kind of a life of its own to liberate it from the underlying rhythms and harmonies. So you take the melody, you add a few little twists and turns to it, all of which introduces something new into the rhythm, because these variations on the melody sort of bump up against the underlying rhythm. And they do so in really the most wonderful way, creating what can be called syncopation. And that has different definitions, but a good one. And here we ought to think about the piano, you know, left hand, right hand. The rhythm of the melody departs from the rhythm played by the left hand. Accents fall where our ears don't expect to hear them. And it's almost that what we're hearing is a disruption in the pulse of the music. Now, disruption is generally, particularly in the classroom, a very bad thing. But this is a disruption of really the best kind because it adds an element of tension and excitement to the music. It does make it more complex. One other thing that identifies rags from this period is that rags were composed with numerous strains, which is a word to simply say a melody. So you will have the A melody, and then that will be played through. And now a new melodic strain comes on. And often there's four, and they can be played in different patterns. It could be played A followed by B. D figures in there somewhere, and relax, because we're not talking about grades here. And then it usually goes back to A for the ending. So it's not like the structure of a popular song. which has a main theme and then a middle part called the bridge. And this music is more complex.
Can you let our students know what years are we talking about when we talk about ragtime?
The first published rags are in the late 1890s, and serious ragtime composers are, and composers of piano rags are certainly busy into the 1910s.
So, Rob, was ragtime composed by both blacks and whites?
That's an interesting question, because there's kind of a big three in the ragtime world, and that, of course, Scott Joplin, James Scott, and Joseph Lamb, who actually was white, of Irish descent, and composition of ragtime. The black African tradition brought over with the slaves that can have more of an outlet after slavery ends. There was something they heard in their heads, an expression of the polyrhythms, that's the term, that came over from Africa and also from the Caribbean and other Latin cultures.
So as this is a form for the piano, how did Americans experience ragtime? Were they playing pianos?
Well, we have to remember that we are looking at a time, and I know this will be very unnerving to students, when you didn't have radio, you weren't downloading songs from the ether, didn't have records. The best way, and in some respects, the only way to bring music into the house was with the piano. And pianos were reaching a price where more and more homes could have them. The piano comes into the home. People are able to buy sheet music, which is really the primary way of distributing and making a song accessible to households. They might be advertised. People would go to the music departments of a local store or emporium, and the clerk at the counter would say, hey, this is brand new, and we have someone here who can play it on our piano so you can hear it, decide if you want to buy it. So it was in the home with the piano that people entertained themselves. They might have some folks in, gather around the piano, sing some of the current songs, but also play some of the new music that was being specifically composed for the piano, which was the case of ragtime. That the ragtime era is not just about ragtime music.
So what is in the music that seems to embody this feeling? And why were people ready for this feeling at this time?
There is a shift, something of a revolution in American popular music. And I think this is also fostered by the development of recordings and phonographs, because that brings music, makes it more accessible, brings it into the home. During the 1910s, you had a couple named Vernon and Irene Castle who were dancers. And their great achievement was to make dancing socially acceptable for what we would describe as the blue noses, by which blue nose refers to the snobs, the people who think that immorality is just around the corner. The Castles made dance acceptable, and so that fostered a demand for dance music on record. So there's all sorts of forces going on, and I do believe the development of the recording industry is also key, but it is also the recognition that you can take a musical form and commercialize it because you have avenues to commercialize it, and that's going on in the early years of the 20th century. Changes in what is popular in music are tied to prevailing attitudes. And when you think about some of the most important musical sweeps in this country, in its history, and I'm thinking about the swing era when big bands come in the mid-30s and the Beatles.
Hip-hop
and rock and roll in general. What's the common denominator? These are all youth cultures that are responsible for bringing a lot of musical shifts and changes. And dancing becomes the province of the young. And now that the Castles have come up with some original dances that look like they won't take young dancers down a road of immorality, you've unleashed something new there.
How widespread was it really?
Blacks brought an ingrained culture, which included music, when they were brought to the United States. It was somewhat suppressed during the years of slavery, and after slavery, it begins to flower again, and it becomes, without doubt, a huge factor in the development of all sorts of American musical expressions. Well, it might be worthwhile to hear the separate strains, to follow those as one listens, but also to listen closely to the melodies, because the melodies of so many rags are beautiful.
I want to thank you, Rob Bamberger, so much for speaking with us today about ragtime. This has been a fantastic and enriching conversation.
Thank you for asking me. I'm delighted to have a chance to do anything with Ford's Theater.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.